Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! This second day of our broadcast week on the horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you'll find the PayPal button that helps keep all of this going. It's where you'll find the link to the chat room. It's where you'll find the listen live button that makes getting the stream ever so easy. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, except when the crappy little internet company is unable to maintain an internet feed to and from our location. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Titanic Tuesday on the horn. And as usual, I can't help but note what a magnificent deconstruction of the right wing Dr. Bill O'Brien has once again done of... You know, what else is there to call them except traitors now? The treasonous the post Confederates of the anti-American right wing. They peeled them like a grape again. You can get Dr. Bill's podcast feed by simply going to WhiteRoseSociety.org and looking for the Dr. Bill O'Brien link. And going in there and just, you know, bang, grab the podcast feed, and every time a new program goes up, you'll get it. Or you can always listen live between 4 and 6 p.m. Eastern Time, just before this program. So, it's Titanic Tuesday, so named for the Titanic intellects of the right wing, and named after one of like 972nd tier right wing blabber who was once on the air over in America's fifth smallest radio market, to wit, Beckley, West Virginia, who once upon a time advised one of his knuckle walking, mouth breathing, toenail tooth picking listeners that there are fossils in the rock strata of West Pycod, Virginia, because of the movement of the Titanic plate. No, it's the movement of the or the Titanic Jell-O mold, for that matter. Really, when you get right down to it, that's where we get the idea for Titanic Tuesday. A couple of little notes. Phones are still screwed up. Hopefully they will be fixed in short order. And note number two, I will be gone on day. At least that's the plan. My youngest daughter is a homecoming court princess, and we have to go see the at halftime where they escort her out of the football field. It's a very special thing. Third program, and this one is all upper solid, and it's one of two, but I don't know how I'm sort of situated. Very sad. We have one of the patriarchs of my family has gone on. My 93-year-old uncle, veteran of the Second World War, carrier fighter pilot ace, left reality as we understand it this morning. And so there will be a funeral sometime in the next few days, and it's a good 8-hour drive from here. And I badly need to be there. And I badly want to be there. But I do not know when it's going to be. Details are not firmed up as yet. So if I'm gone prior to Friday, I hope you will understand. And I hope you will know that that's where I am. But we, all of us, are here together this evening. And I'm looking forward to I'm looking forward to conversations such as we can have. Bear in mind, just because the phones are screwed up does not mean that we are utterly incommunicado here. We have the Skype lines. Skype, by the way, is very easy to use. It's available, I mean, anything that's got a microphone attached to it, laptop, tablet. You may have heard Larry on some of the Friday on the Front Porches. He uses the microphone on an iPad, and it sounds very good quality. So there, Bob Kincaid Horn is how you reach me via Skype. BobKincaidHorn, and bang, there you are. If you've never done that before, just send me a note. I'll add you to the send me a note via Skype. I'll add you to the contact list, and you can then get in on the conversation that way. Marty, no streaming issues here. We are sending with no buffering whatsoever. Marty says, my condolences to you and your family for your uncle's passing, his energy back into the universe. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, Marty. Thank you. Thank you, Luda. Luda getting us started with the fundraising this evening. Of course, we have $150 to raise on any given evening in order to stay out of any holes. Luda getting us started this evening, and we now need only 14 folks at $10 apiece to finish fundraising for this evening. So thank you. Thank you, Luda, very, very much. Where to begin this evening, Dan accused? Because Moran Monday was an absolute field day. I believe it was Fritz who noted to me via Twitter overnight that yesterday's Moran Monday could have been a six-hour Moran Monday. There was such a wealth of information. Steve started out listening live and then finished via podcast with Moran Monday and dropped me this note short for airtime. Steve said, I was listening to the rest of the program today on podcast and heard the woman after Sandy Rios screeching. Bob, I was having lunch at the time at a local restaurant. Normally, that wouldn't affect me because I'd instead of the source. But I nearly broke down hearing these two, particularly woman number two. That was Star Parker. I keep wondering what we gay folk have done to deserve all this vitriol. Whenever I hear this stuff, I can't help but get this feeling as if I'm standing in the middle of a room with a bunch of ghouls closing in on me. In all truthfulness, it scares me. When I hear this stuff, I hear a real concerted effort to make us gay folk out to be subhuman, almost like animals. I don't want to be alarmist, and I don't want to minimize anything, but I have to wonder if this is how Jewish folk felt in pre-war Germany. For any Jewish listeners, please accept my apologies if this goes too far. I also understand that to a certain extent my white privilege inoculates me from some of this. I still feel this sense that things are closing in on us gay folks. Steve continues, finally, and I think more importantly, why is it that these people get to co-opt the term values? I get so sick of having these people tell me, because I'm gay or liberal or progressive or whatever, that they get to tell me that I essentially have no values. Why do we, as liberals, allow them to co-opt this? I wish we would call them out for exactly what they are: hateful, bigoted, fear-mongering, ugly, and frankly unworthy of being in a democratic pluralistic society. I guess that's the point. They don't want a democratic pluralistic society. Even so, we need to call these people out for what they are: hate-filled bigots. They're right. These are done. They're right. Bigotry, hate, ugliness, and fear-mongering, our values. We just need to make them own these values. And, of course, remember, in talking about about pre-war Germany and people being rounded up, Steve, the Jewish people wore the yellow star. There was a pink triangle for people deemed to be sexual deviants in the Third Reich. So, no, I don't think anyone's going to be offended by your feeling of being somewhat unnerved by the manifestations of hate and bigotry that are to be witnessed from the Christian community, the right-wing, fundamentalist, evangelical Christian community, practically every day in this once great nation. So, there we are. But then again, Steve says we need to call them out. There aren't many places available in terms of media that is more willing to call them out than what we do here. Because if anything, we do not shrink from calling out hate, condemn hate, and frankly being intolerant of hate. There's no room for it. And Steve's right. Any sort of even arguably democratic pluralistic society, well, they're unworthy of it. But then again, they don't want to be part of it to begin with. We must understand here on the 15th day of October 2013, with something being referred to as a debt crisis looming over our heads, we must understand, finally, firmly, absolutely, that these right-wing monsters are getting what they want. They have no interest in preventing a default. In fact, I sent along an article that Sandra had tweeted to me. I sent it along to Dr. Bill. He incorporated it in his program. And I think it deserves to be reiterated upon here. It comes from Reuters. And the essence of the argument is that the effects of the default have already begun. Felix Salmon is the author of this Reuters piece. He actually wrote it yesterday. And he talks about the dire predictions regarding default, and then points out the fact that defaulting on the debt, the bond debt, is not quite the looming disaster that others would predict, because the financial markets deal with things like that on a routine basis. But then he gets down into, Felix Salmon does, gets down into the body of his argument, and he says, we're already well past the point at which that certainty, namely the certainty, meaning the certainty of the reliability of the finances of the federal government, you know, we the people working on that more perfect union, those of us still interested in that, we're already well past the point at which that certainty has been called into question. The Vaseline, he says, in other words, already has sand in it. The global faith in U.S. institutions has already been undermined. The mechanism by which catastrophe would arise has already been set into motion. As a result, economic growth in both the U.S. and the rest of the world will be lower than it should be. Unemployment will be higher. Social unrest will be more destructive. These things aren't as bad now as they would be if we actually got to a point of payment default, but even a payment default wouldn't cause mass overnight failures. The catastrophe would be, and this is important, slower and nastier than that. Less visible. Less spectacular. We're not talking about the final scene of Fight Club. We're talking more about another global credit crisis where credit means trust, and trust means trust in the U.S. government as the one institution which cannot fail. I found it interesting that Dr. Bill observed in regard to this that the economy and economics in general and the market are more than anything else faith-based institutions. One has to have faith in the ability of the market to remain somewhat stable, up, down, sure, but that the game itself is not rigged in order for it to continue to work. With the teabaggers and what I recognize to be just Confederates, that's all at play now. That assumption can no longer be made. In his ultimate paragraph, Felix Salmon says, while debt default is undoubtedly the worst of all possible worlds, then the bonkers level of Washington dysfunction on display right now is nearly as bad. Every day that goes past is a day where trust and faith in the U.S. government is evaporating. And once it has evaporated, it will never return. Get that. It will never return. The Republicans in the House have already managed to inflict significant lasting damage to the U.S. and the global economy, even if they were to pass a completely clean bill tomorrow morning, which they won't. He was referring to this morning, and he was right, they didn't. The default has already started and is already causing real harm. The only question is how much worse it's going to get. Back up in the body of the article, though, there was this. At the other end, you have the sequester, which involves, really, we need to get all the way down to the ground on this one. At the other end, you have the sequester, which involves telling a large number of government employees that the resources which were promised to them will not, in fact, arrive. Both of them involve the government going back on its promises, but some promises are far more binding and far more important than others. For the federal government workers, who the law says have a property interest, an ownership interest in their jobs, who have been canned, the default has already happened. We are much further into this right-wing neo-Confederate revolution, rebellion, if you will. I've been using revolution. I think it's wrong. I think I've been wrong all along. This is rebellion. Very little different, save for the musketry, than what was done in 1861. When they started lobbing shells at Fort Sumter. We are well down the road in a rebellion. The Cold Civil War is in full swing. And the question now is, what can we do to once again defeat the wicked, the evil forces of the Confederacy? I don't necessarily know those answers. I wish I did. Certainly strikes me that we are dealing with acts of treason. and treason is clear is the only crime defined in the Constitution itself. As noted previously on this program, Section 4 of the 14th Amendment says the validity of the public debt shall not be questioned. Well, the teabaggers and the neo-Confederates have been questioning the validity of the public debt all along. And there have been absolutely no consequences for their having done so. Even so, even though you may argue that questioning the public debt is a treasonous act. Irish Dave noting the disaster capitalism is already baked into the tea cakes, which we should eat. By the way, I hate all bigots. It's all a Texas Tea Party rebellion. It's a neo-Confederate rebellion, as far as I'm concerned. I do think we would be manifestly better off if we understood it that way. 22 minutes past the hour, and thanks very much to Ed for picking up where Luta got us started. 115 to go to make tonight's fundraising goal, and hopefully we can get there quickly. And if I'm going to have to be gone more than a day this week, well, I guess we'll be in another hole unless we jump out in front of it. So if you haven't kicked in a while, feel free to, if you can, PayPal button or traditional mail address. Other things to contemplate this evening? Plenty of them. Three firearms stories this evening. And, well, let's go here. Yes, by all means, let's go to Arkansas, where at a Smokin' Joe's Rib House in Rogers, Arkansas, owner Johnny Howard put up a sign on his rib joint display. Obamacare, America's punishment for slavery years. Now that's an interesting combination. You know, when people who have no idea of chemistry start fooling around with chemistry, they often blow themselves up, and thereby sort of take themselves out of the mix as far as amateur chemists are concerned. But there seems to be little consequence for people who have no understanding of history. Obamacare, America's punishment for slavery years. So America had slavery, and 150 years later, we got a black president who punished America by forcing Americans to get health care. Yow. Zounds. Yoikes. Although apparently there in Rogers, Arkansas, there was enough of a flap about it that Johnny Howard had to walk it back instead of doubling down. I apologize for the sign. It's offending people as it did. I didn't intend for it to be racist-oriented at all. Isn't that sweet? Obamacare, America's punishment for slavery years, was not intended to be racist-oriented at all. That was not a message oriented toward the racists. That was a message oriented toward everybody to explain the perils of having a Negro in the White House. No, he didn't say that part. Somebody snapped a picture of it, although it only stayed up for about 45 minutes. Johnny Howard complained that the message was taken out of context. Amateur English users. If the only damned words on the sign are Obamacare, America's punishment for slavery years, that's the entirety of the context. There's no context to take it out of. That's it. Obamacare, America's punishment for slavery years. You can't take that out of context. Unless Johnny Howard has other signs on either side that, you know, like Burma shave signs of generations past. He's just frustrated with the Affordable Care Act, not President Barack Obama. And Johnny Howard made it plain. He said, it's the policy. And I made the mistake of wording it in the wrong fashion. The policy. It's not the person. It's the policy. Oh, mercy. Of course, last night we had all those things that we came up with that were not as bad as, that were not worse than slavery, and things that were, that the Obamacare was worse than. Polio comes to mind. The list got pretty long by the end of the program. But apparently Johnny Howard, he's got it contextualized. The policy of Obamacare is America's punishment for slavery years. Ooh-wee. Oh, well. So we got somebody who doesn't understand the English or the history. And there you go. Dr. John cutting right to the chase. The Arkansas barbecue philosopher. Subject line. How much you want to bet that tea cracker uses liquid smoke on his ribs? I wouldn't eat his ribs to find out. I'd rather go somewhere that I know that there ain't no liquid smoke involved. Say, maybe Dreamland in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Ain't nothing like them nowhere. Yeah, you understand that when Dr. John says uses liquid smoke on his ribs, that's like, what is that? That's like saying he cheats or spits in his iced tea or something. Yeah, there's just some things you don't do. Irish Dave says, I knew context. Context was a friend of mine. And you, sir, don't know context. What else? Oh, plenty. Two Jerry Brown stories here. And interesting ones at that. One from last week, one from this. Last week, California Governor Jerry Brown, who was once deemed to be the most liberal human being who had ever drawn breath, vetoed a bill. The California legislature, Senate and Assembly, passed a law that would have imposed what were described as the most restrictive gun ownership laws in the United States. At the time the bill reached his desk, there were 17 firearm-related bills before the governor. Governor Brown is, of course, wanting to be reelected. And so he actually vetoed a bill that would ban semi-automatic rifles. If you need a semi-automatic rifle to hunt deer, you need to go back to the range and work on your shooting. Most of the self-respecting deer hunters I know around here would be embarrassed to be caught in the woods with a semi-automatic rifle. I think of old Melt the Barrel Daryl. Quiet morning in late November, frost on the ground, all done up in our blaze orange. I was never successful at deer killing. But you'd be stalking your way into position where maybe you'd get a bead on that big old Boone and Crockett rack. All of a sudden, you'd hear a four-wheeler in the distance. And then the four-wheeler would come to a halt. Then you'd hear, blam, 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 blam. And my buddy'd look up and say, melt the barrel, Daryl. Come on, Bob. Let's go find us another spot. Won't be another deer around here for 100 years, as long as Daryl's out there on his four-wheeler. And away we would go. Daryl, meanwhile, with all them blams, would have missed his deer. I guess he was trying to walk him in or something. Who knows? But Jerry Brown refused to sign into law, vetoed, a bill that would have eliminated the sorts of weapons that were used, the sort of weapon that was used at, say, Sandy Hook Elementary in Newtown, Connecticut. Because, you know, freedom! Wolverines! Right. Paul Song is the executive chairman of the Courage Campaign in California. He told the San Francisco Chronicle that Brown's behavior was cowardly, and said that at some point in time, Jerry Brown, as a result of that veto, will have blood on his hands. And I'd say he's pretty close to being correct. Because if your desire to be reelected outweighs the common sense that says you don't need a semi-automatic rifle to go squirrel hunting, well, you take as it comes. On the other hand, he vetoed another bill, and I think just, what, today, yesterday? A bill reached Jerry Brown's desk, passed by the legislature, that suggested simple possession of cannabis should have at least, if not be absolutely decriminalized, have a lesser penalty. That, too, was a bridge too far for Governor Brown. Simple drug possession would have been changed from a felony to a misdemeanor under the law that reached his desk. Jerry Brown vetoed it because he said, this bill would allow possession of heroin or cocaine to be charged as a misdemeanor instead of a felony. Well, there's another side to that argument. The bill came from Senator Mark Leno, a Democrat from San Francisco, who said his bill would have allowed counties to significantly reduce incarceration costs by giving prosecutors the flexibility to charge low-level nonviolent drug offenses as a misdemeanor or felony, also known as a wobbler. Organizations behind the bill, the American Civil Liberties Union, Drug Policy Alliance, Ella Baker Center for Human Rights, and the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. See, it didn't mean you had to charge possession of heroin or cocaine as a misdemeanor, because anybody who's ever messed around with any of this stuff, I don't mean the drugs, I mean the law and the policy, knows that there's a level at which if you've got that much of it in your possession, the law deems that you are possessing with intent to deliver. And that intent to deliver part, well, hello, felony. Meanwhile, however, there are people in the California prison system who are doing hard time for, you know, a gram of coke or a rock of crack. And I think there's a legitimate public policy debate to be had as to whether or not that person really should be, you know, locked up next to the murderers and the rapists and the arsonists and the... Oh, wait, no, not the banksters. We don't put banksters in prison, do we? No. Yeah, I know, Marty. Marty, remember, Bob, this is Jerry Brown 2.0 you're reading about. Yes. Marty reminding us that the 1906 and 1979 earthquakes in Northern California weren't worse than Obamacare. Marty noting, somehow I doubt that. Jim, with an observation, Obamacare and slavery, neo-Confederates. That phrase epitomizes their motto for sure. You see, I've still got it. I'm still 2-1 that we passed the 17th without any kind of a bill. And as Dr. Bill noted during his program, I'm right nervous if we don't. Anything that gets past John Boehner's House of Representatives. Is going to have some, you know, kneecapping in it for Granny and all those useless eaters. It has to. And remember, even if it's some sort of a bill that says, well, you know, we'll convene a committee to deal with the sequester. Well, how do you think Eric Cantor is going to deal with the sequester? By dealing with the useless eaters and the babies who are uselessly eating, what do they say, unfairly putting our grandchildren into debt. Well, maybe not, because it looks like a lot of the grandbabies are going to be born hungry and stay that way. Obamacare, worse than your phone service, says Bill in Cleveland. Yeah, see how it works? Irish Dave reminding, Bob, I don't need to remind you, but you just did. Jerry the Jesuit has always advocated for a balanced budget amendment in the Holy Constitution, too, also. True, if I understand correctly. Marty noting, if Obamacare is America's punishment for slavery, I'd have to opine that America's getting off easy. Very easy. Yeah. Before we go too much further, I have a plea. And that is, stop it, please. The line between satire and news has become so damn blurred that I feel like I'm being had with about half of the news stories I open these days. Witness the latest story about a decision made by Fukushima Industries. They, like other corporations, have a mascot. Theirs is a little egg with wings, and it's a smiling egg. Broad part of the egg to the bottom, pointy side to the top. It's a smiling egg with clown shoes and wings. By the way, is the typhoon still bearing down on Fukushima? Yeah, that's what I thought. Fukushima Industries, not TEPCO. We're not talking about the people who run the who helped create the disaster by, you know, with the bullshit reactors. This is just Fukushima Industries. I think they make refrigerators or something. Maybe they bring good things to life. Who knows? But they needed a corporate spokes mascot. So they created one. An egg with wings and clown shoes. The name. And I spent an inordinate amount of time, I'll have you know, trying to find out if this was, did this say Daily Current or Sports Pickle or Onion on it anywhere? Up and down, around and around, chased it down. No, it is straight. It is a straight up news story by Agence France-Presse. And no, just because it's Agence France-Presse and just because the French think Jerry Lewis was funny, no, this is not satire or parody. The mascot for Fukushima Industries is named Fuck Uppy. F-U-K-U-P-P-Y. All around the country today, terrestrial broadcasters are having a field day with this story because it means they get to say that word on the terrestrial airwaves with no fear whatsoever of the Federal Communications Commission's censorship bureau. Fuck Uppy. F-U-K-U-P-P-Y. It turns out that the corporate marketing geniuses there at Fukushima Industries said that Fuck Uppy is a neologism made by combining the first part of the company name, you know, Fukushima, Fuku, F-U-K-U, and the end of the English word, happy, Fuku, happy. Only it came out Fuck Uppy. They're retiring Fuck Uppy, Fukushima Industries is. I understand Fuck Uppy has been... I'm sorry, I'm about 11 and a half at this point. I understand Fuck Uppy has been traded to TEPCO Industries for a mascot to be named later. Yeah, Fukushima Industries has offices in China, Singapore, Hong Kong, Malaysia, and Taiwan. And nobody had enough understanding of English to not release, and it happened in April, Fuck Uppy to the public. Fukupi? Just remember, if you happen to hear some for-profit media news accounts of the Fukushima Industries mascot, that somewhere there is a very, very happy announcer who's getting to say Fuck Uppy on the air with no risk of FCC involvement. Corporate said, "We sincerely apologize for worrying many people and creating misunderstanding among them. We will look into the name, including a rethink of it." I'd just hand it over to TEPCO and be done with it. It works for them. I'm not using that one. I'm not going to use that one, Irish Dave. I'm not. I think I'd better delete it before it gets... Yeah. Yeah, Jim pointing out that the Secretary of the Treasury said there could be no selection between vets or grandmas. His testimony before Congress stated that this action would be unthinkable. Who would play Solomon? Jim, the teabaggers are so past any interest in Solomon that the light from Solomon will be a million years reaching them. There won't be a choice between vets and Solomon. Well, I mean, okay, disabled vets and stuff like that, absolutely. Or not vets and grannies. No, vets and grannies are both going to feel the pain, so nobody's going to have to play Solomon. The only thing that is sacrosanct, the only cow that is sacred, the only thing that cannot be touched is the active military budget. And the monies that we spend on, like, contractors, like, Booz Allen Hamilton. Those folks are protected. Oy. Oh, and lest you think it only happens here, I told you the story about my son's teacher who was screaming Obama and the N-word back on October the 1st. No, it apparently happens in L.A., too. Some young enterprising student turned their telephone recorder on, apparently, on September the 26th. When at a lesson on race and ethnicity at the Humanities and Art Academy in Harbor City, California, a teacher of unreleased name went off the deep end trying to explain to her students that African American was an improper term. And then she went a little wild. You're an American first. Then she told the students that her family came from Italy, but she doesn't call herself an Italian American. Jim Dandy little recording. Comes from the Daily Breeze, which I suppose is a paper out that way. Hang on, let's see what we got here.
My fucking shit. I'll tell you I'm wrong, but I know my fucking shit. Don't fuck with that. I'm tired of trying to educate you, and you guys resist every step of the fucking way. Get the fuck out of here.
Well, now. Teacher has a potty mouth. And all of this was a lesson about race and ethnicity at the Humanities and Art Academy. The teacher is apparently on paid leave there at, under the auspices of the Los Angeles Unified School District. And lo and behold, the students are the ones who stepped out to defend her. Aaron Taylor said it's wrong to be cussing at students especially, but a lot of kids here aggravate the teachers. She's a good teacher. Everybody makes mistakes, and she's only human. Another teacher pointed out that she'd apologized. Everybody forgave her, Summer Washington said. That's our favorite teacher. And, you know, she probably is, because, you know, she's not afraid to use the language the cool kids use in a class on race and ethnicity. Ouch. Robert in Robert up in Australia writing, subject line, French Connection, United Kingdom. Bob, we still have French Connection, United Kingdom stores here in Oz. F-C-U-K. Walking through a mall, you see F-C-U-K on the front of a store. Your mind almost automatically spell checks, and then you're looking twice, which is what they want. Good marketing. Fuck uppy. Ron and Raleigh, subject line, African-American. Once again, the only African-American I know of is Charlize Theron. What? Not Barack Hussein Obama, Ron? Okay, that was unfair. Oh, dear. I'll have to find you the link later, Ed. I already nixed it. Sorry. It's going to be, well. Sort of hand in hand with the story earlier about how, the Jerry Brown vetoing the drug possession. Well, Jerry Brown's not the only one out there worrying about drugs. No. There is a sure enough, no kidding, genius. We use the term loosely around here these days. Representative from North Carolina stand. Her name is Virginia Double X Fox. And she was eager to vote to cut $40 billion from the food stamp program. And her reasoning? I hadn't heard this one before, so I thought you guys would enjoy it too, this being Titanic Tuesday and everything. In remarks recorded by the Congressional Record, which is in that business, Virginia Double X Fox said, the Nutrition Reform and Work Opportunity Act, that's what they named their little bill, screwing over the useless eaters. The Nutrition Reform and Work Opportunity Act, NRWOA, is designed to preserve the integrity of the SNAP program for families, especially children, who rely on food stamps. Reforms in this legislation put stronger protections in place to ensure that SNAP money is reserved only for those who qualify for food stamps and isn't wasted on government public relations campaigns, medical marijuana purchases, or lottery winners. Questionable loopholes and recruitment activities which extend assistance to those who make too much money are also ended. Because, you know, we've got $40 billion worth of... Wait. Stop. Huh? Lottery winners? Am I to understand that there's a new scratch-off game? Where if you get 3 soup cans, you get a month's worth of food stamps? I haven't run across that one yet. Wouldn't surprise me. Good God. Ensure that SNAP money is reserved only for... Anybody want to help me out here? I'm kind of at a loss. Is there somebody out there that's getting SNAP benefits in the form of a cash payment that they're running around to their corner medical marijuana dispensary and instead of... Wait. If you're going to your local medical marijuana dispensary, wouldn't you want some extra... I mean, what happens when you get the munchies? I'm lost. I admit it. I'm trying to follow the reasoning of this obviously brilliant member of the House of Representatives sent to us by the kind and loving people of the state of North Carolina stand, and I'm licked. The House bill is going to throw 3.8 million people, those would be American citizens, off of the food stamp program, SNAP, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. Going to throw 3.8 million of them off of the rolls. No more food for you, you damn potheads. There are 3.8 million people who have apparently been spending their SNAP benefits on weed. I don't know how that works. If the bill was enacted into law, 3 million people would be thrown off the rolls. The year after that, 3 million more would be thrown off the rolls. The year after that, 3 million more. The year after that, over 10 years, 3 million people a year would be thrown off of the SNAP program rolls. Oh, for heaven's sakes. It's already been dealt with. Who knew? But there's a federal regulation to go with this. The USDA already has a reg that says a household may not utilize the SNAP medical deduction for the cost of any substance considered illegal under federal law. So if I got the... Oh, my head. It hurts. You have to turn in certain financial data to get on the SNAP program. I understand that. And I suppose the way they calculate eligibility, if you've got a bunch of medical expenses, you get to deduct those, like prescription medicines that aren't covered. So am I to understand that there were 30 million Americans, many of whom are in places like Georgistan and Alabamistan, Louisianistan, Mississippistan, Oklahomistan, none of whom have medical marijuana laws, who were deducting their dope costs? In order to qualify for SNAP benefits? Do you ever marvel at these right-wing friends of Jesus who just sit around worrying about how the useless eaters are figuring out a way to keep on eating? Ron and Raleigh with a question. A philosophical question, I think it is. Open to discussion, I suppose. Don't you ever just want to give these lying assholes five across the eyes? Lies roll off their tongues like water off a duck's back. The newest meme is that they don't want to give their hard-earned money to people who aren't willing to work hard. Oh, I got a belly full of that yesterday at the doctor's office, for God's sakes. My husband works hard for that insurance that we've got. He blows up mountains, by the way. And I just don't think it's right for somebody who ain't willing to work to have health care. After she said that health care was an absolute right. The crowd that comes from the land of judge not that you be not judged wants to get busy doing some hardcore judging. Jesus. So, go figure. There we are, minute past 7 o'clock here on the East Coast. Time to take a break. We have tonight the Green News Report, it being Tuesday and everything, with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. I look forward to those. They do a very good job, Brad and Desi do. If you want to offer up some sort of observation, email works fine, bobkincaid@gmail.com, on the Twitters, @BobKincaid, on Facebook, Bob Kincaid. And, of course, Bob Kincaid Horn on the Skype. Over on the Facebook earlier today, I saw a photo for the ages and immediately tweeted it. I don't know who to credit for it. But it's a teabagger. You know, teabaggers like to write on the backs of their cars. This teabagger wrote on the back of their Ford Explorer, "Obama is the Antichrist." Really? The Antichrist. The Messiah of those six-legged little workers. Obama is the Antichrist. You need those little moments, though. Obama's the Antichrist. Fuck uppy. Because if you don't get a giggle now and then, it ain't going to be nothing but grief all the way down. So jump in any way you want to. Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype, etc. We call what we do here conversation radio. We are able to deliver the conversation radio because of you. We need to bring in another $115 this evening. 11 folks at 10, 22 folks at 5, 5.5 people at 20, I think. We'll get it sorted out. Any way you slice it, though, this is The Horn, and I'm Bob Kincaid.
Jump. Tuesday, October 15, 2013.
Breaking, the Supreme Court to hear challenge to EPA greenhouse gas regulations. India dodges a bullet. Fukushima prepares for another. Meet the nation's newest oil spill, now in North Dakota. Government shutdown shuts down U.S. research program in Antarctica. Plus, glimpse the future with the latest winners in solar cars and solar houses.
All of those glimpses of the future straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
Lady, we've got about 10 minutes before this entire country is up in flames. If you want to live, you better step on the gas. Oh, wait, is this a Tesla? Well, step on the pissy pedal. We're going to die.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, some pretty big breaking news just in as we go to air today. The Supreme Court has agreed to hear a challenge to new EPA greenhouse gas regulations.
Yes, and no surprise, the challenge comes from major industrial polluters. The good news is that the justices declined to hear challenges to the EPA's endangerment finding. That's the scientific finding that carbon emissions are pollutants that endanger human health and welfare. They also declined to revisit their own previous ruling, saying the EPA has the authority to set emission standards for cars and trucks. But the Supremes will now decide whether EPA authority extends to setting limits for big stationary industrial sources of pollution like power plants and refineries, which are by far the largest sources of U.S. greenhouse gas pollution.
So in 2007, the Supreme Court said, yes, the EPA has the right under the Clean Air Act, signed in the 70s by Richard Nixon. Yes, the EPA can regulate greenhouse gases coming out of automobiles. Now the question is, can they regulate greenhouse gases coming out of large power plants?
Exactly. And it's another industry attempt to derail and delay any new emissions limits for the biggest industrial polluters.
And we should add, the case that they're looking at was decided unanimously by three judges on the appellate court, one Reagan appointee, two Clinton appointees, who said that it was, quote, unambiguously correct that the EPA had the responsibility to limit greenhouse gases on these major power plants.
We'll see if the conservative majority on the Supreme Court agrees. They'll hear the case in 2014. Massive evacuations and extensive government preparations averted disaster in India, where super cyclone Pailin made landfall over the weekend.
They certainly wanted to avoid a repeat of what happened in 1999, where a lack of warning and lack of planning led to the death of 10,000
That storm back in 1999 was the strongest hurricane ever recorded in the Bay of Bengal until Pailin, which tied the record, and it caused widespread devastating property and crop damage, but fewer than 30 people were killed by the storm compared to over 10,000 in 1999. Emergency measures are underway at the crippled Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant in Japan to prepare for Typhoon Weifa. Forecasters say Weifa is weakening, but it is still the strongest storm to threaten the region in over 10 years. Plant owners are already overwhelmed trying to contain millions of gallons of radioactive wastewater. Meet the nation's newest oil spill, now in North Dakota. A farmer discovered over 800,000 gallons of crude oil had spilled from a pipeline on his land. Covers an area the size of 7 football fields. State officials waited 2 weeks before they were forced to acknowledge the spill's existence to the public because they say there was no environmental damage. But the farmer says the land will be unusable for at least several years.
So that's a pretty huge oil spill. Much of America hasn't heard about it because of the shutdown fight in Washington, D.C.
Speaking of the government shutdown, now in its third week, the impacts continue to pile up. Unless funding is found, the U.S. research program in Antarctica will be canceled for the entire year. The scientists say that will devastate the U.S. Antarctic research program for many years because of the extremely difficult nature and long lead times for research in the harsh extremes of the Antarctic.
So major oil spill doesn't make the news. Potential shutting down of major scientific research doesn't make the news. Mission accomplished, mission accomplished.
But some good news.
They're in a car race that's taking them from Darwin in the north down to Adelaide in the south. and they're depending on that powerful Australian sun and their own ingenuity to get there.
Students from the Netherlands Eindhoven University of Technology won this year's World Solar Challenge, a car race powered solely by the sun across the Australian outback. Their solar-paneled three-seater sedan beat 39 other teams from across the world. We also have a winner in the Solar Decathlon, the international design competition held by the U.S. Department of Energy to award the best, most efficient solar-powered house built from the ground up by teams of university students. On Saturday, Vienna University of Technology won first place overall for the most affordable, energy-efficient, and most attractive solar-powered house. Students from the University of Nevada took second place, but every house in the competition this year produced more energy than it used, including appliances.
The house itself produced more energy than was used by the house itself.
That's right.
Let's have more of that. Speaking of more of that, you can get more of that at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download the Green News Report anytime via iTunes, Stitcher, or TuneIn. Find us and like us on the Facebook and follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Oh, I love that song. That's how I like it. Andrea True Connection, wasn't it? Yeah, I think so. I mentioned the Antichrist photo. It's popped up a couple of times on my Facebook page, and bless his heart, our old buddy Joe Vecchio was there and ready to go, noting, "I for one welcome our ant overlords, as long as they're not Kenyan ants." And going to the Skype line just in a second here, but just got one of those blast emails from Daily Kos. Bob, in just 2 days, Republicans might cause the United States to default on its debts. These are scary times, but we can't give in to hostage-taking and fear. Sign our petition thanking President Obama and Democrats in Congress for standing up to Republican hostage-taking and urge them to stay strong as the fight continues. I hope they stay strong. I know there are some in the Congress who will stay strong. The problem is I'm not convinced that President not sure will stand strong. Hey, Sandra.
Hey, Bob. How's it going?
Pretty good. Are you kind of there? Not quite so convinced about President not sure?
Nah, hell no. I'm not convinced about that fool. I mean, if I was him, I'd be scared shitless, so I'm not going to really get on him too much. It just sounds like a nightmare. I'm sorry. At this point, I a fear for him, and I think that it's just way up north, but I'm more disturbed by, you know, Oprah disparaging us. And did you see that article?
Oh, you talking about the conversation with Diana Nyad?
Yeah, she said, in her opinion, atheists are incapable of awe. Well, fuck her.
I didn't quite go that far yesterday evening, but yeah, that pissed me off right good. There's no, yeah, because you know, the first thing that brought to mind for me yesterday evening was, you know, Carl Sagan and his pale blue dot. Nobody's ever going to accuse Carl Sagan of being incapable of awe. He talks about how, you know, astronomy and physics are humbling experiences.
Oh, no, but she's just full of shit, you know. I mean, when that reef shark was looking at me 2 feet away, that was some fucking awe. What the fuck is she talking about? You understand what I'm saying?
Oh,
the
yeah.
nerve. The nerve.
What,
you know?
Did you catch the whole clip?
Oh,
because I love the part
no.
about how she talks to her trees there on her lavish estate.
Well, it's just, you know, she needs to go and scare up some other racial incident like she did in Sweden and just, you know, shut the hell up. That just sort of took me aback. I thought, oh, please, you know what? Go give away some cars. I'll go screw your girlfriend.
See, you and me are right in the same place because I halfway expected. I watched the video, then I played the audio, and I halfway expected her to look at Diana Nyad and say, "Ah, so you don't believe in God, huh? Look under your chair. You've got a new Pontiac."
Exactly. I mean, you know, these people need. You know what? Oh no. Anyway. wow. You know, I should have went and saw George Clooney. That would put me in a better mood than looking at this bullshit. Anyway, yeah, the that article was, wasn't that, I mean, it was pretty damn scary, but the Salmon article was, you know, just full of really interesting observations about the contract that the government is failing on so many points already, right now, you know. But people don't consider workers anything but nothing. So I just appreciated him pointing that fact out right there, because then people assumed that they were going to be getting X, Y, and Z, and they're not. And that's a breakdown in trust.
You know? Sure, and I've seen the stories about 10% off sandwiches, and we've got the bartender in D.C. who's selling $2 draft beers. I haven't seen any news, and Hyundai is holding car payments in abeyance and everything, but I haven't seen any stories about how the power company is declining to turn off power, or the water company is going to let the water keep flowing, even though federal workers got nothing to pay them with.
Well, I mean, I understand that we live in an idiocracy, but, you know, in the meanwhile, those of us who know, I'm just looking at the demise of Bretton Woods up in this motherfucker. I'm like, wow, this is huge. If we lose the reserve currency because of this antic, you know, hold on to your ass. Because,
you mean,
you know,
when we start selectively paying debts out, you know, what a farmer would think of as eating the seed corn?
Well, it's just, you know, the sort of international arrangements that we take for granted was born out of us ruling the goddamn world after Europe destroyed itself. Okay, I'm just trying to make it simple.
Yeah.
Okay, so if people are sitting around here thinking that oopsie-daisy, the shining city on the hill brought this shit, no. Our horrible, ginormous military and the rape of Europe brought us to where we are here. And as England fell away, the U.S. can fucking fall away, too. I mean, I just don't understand people's mentality. It's like, this is, you know, a moment that could, you know, really redefine all sorts of arrangements on this planet. And it's not going to be in our favor, so let's have a good time.
Well, but can we take a moment, Sandra, and appreciate the fact that these, at this point in time, anybody who thinks that this is just some sort of accident of failed politics of both sides do it or in it, no, that's all just bullshit now, isn't it?
Just looking at some articles, you know, de-Americanized coming out of Beijing or where the fuck, you know, that's interesting. And, you know, the hegemon is fucking shaking, okay? Big time. I can't, you know, I was like joking with Isaac saying, oh, you know, Obama's going to be the first black president and the last American president, but, you know, I might have to reel that back in.
Yeah, it ain't so funny anymore, is it?
No. I mean, of course I'm being a bit hyperbolic, but, you know, things aren't looking, you know, I'm a bit concerned because I don't see Obama doing nothing but calling off meetings. What about you, Bob?
Uh-uh. No. But you know, you were kind of fair to him when we started this conversation. What's left, Sandra?
Well, no, I'm saying, you know, once again, you know, a lot of it is brought on him because while he's droning brown people to death, he's emasculating the executive branch by capitulating in 2011. Can we go back there?
Yeah, well, I think we have to if we want a complete understanding of the picture.
I'm like, I told you, from George Washington on to George W. Bush, the executive has expanded. That's just a fact of the American experience. We get to Obama, and I don't know what he thought he was doing with his foreign policy. That's all dandy. But he turned himself out with the domestic stuff, because that 2011 capitulation is why these motherfuckers are looking at his ass right now.
Right. He's blinked before. He'll blink again.
And they're going to keep on it. And, you know, and that's the thing that is really disturbing, all mixed up with the whole racial stuff. You know what I mean? With these people talking about put down the Koran and get off your knees and waving the Confederate. I'm just like, where the fuck am I? looking for that passport and getting things in order. I mean,
oddly,
what the fuck is that?
Oddly enough, I did check to make sure I knew where mine was.
Oh, no, listen, I was, like, thinking, oh, dear God, the waving of the Confederacy, the Confederate flag is some heritage, right? Right?
Yeah, that's heritage.
Oh, my God. No, it's kind of confusing because the political economy is really interesting. And once again, when you're talking about the U.S., it always has to be the political economy because our economy is so fake in so many areas. And you have to have the politics in order to, you know, make it seem real. Because right now, the fakery is going away and we're going to be left with, I don't know. I don't know, Bob, because I don't know what, there's people here who think that, they think that default is going to be okay or something. Is that right?
Yeah. The teabaggers think it's going to be, it's going to be the best thing that's ever happened to government. The libertarians are rubbing their hands together all Montgomery Burns-like. Excellent. And yeah, I mean, they're into it.
Well, and the thing about it is, you know, I know people have been going on about the, you know, whatever unilateral position that Obama has, but, you know, I don't, you know, I just don't think that's enough. I really think that we need to have the the Congress, you know, okay this, because all the other bodies, you know, the legitimacy is just not there. You know, Obama just can't make that pronouncement. I mean, I know that progressives are coming up with this coin and the 14th Amendment, but I just think that the way the globalization, all the interdependencies involved, it just leaves us completely vulnerable.
Well, I mean, see, did you catch it? Granted, you and I are 3 hours different, so maybe what I was seeing at 9 o'clock this morning you weren't seeing. But I woke up, turned on the TV set, and all the cable news channels, and, oh, we're going to have an agreement today. Oh, we're going to have an agreement today. McConnell and Harry Reid have reached an agreement, blah, blah, blah. And now all we have to do is have John Boehner cooperate. And I'm sitting there going, you know, what fairy tale world do you people live in? And
well,
that's the thing that keeps just, I mean, it's driving me nuts, Sandra, because everybody keeps assuming that at some point in time, the Republicans are going to stop, and particularly the T-Publicans, the Confederates, whatever we want to call them, are going to stop being that, as if this is some sort of posture, as if this is some sort of assumed facade. This is not. They have told us repeatedly, all the way back, like you say, to 2011, they have told us. Come on. Do we have to haul out Denny Green again, Sandra?
Exactly. No. I'll tell you, it's about time to run that little clip because, I've been following, like, I just go to the source. So this Robert Koska from the, Nation Online, or not online, one of those right-wing,
William
F. Buckley.
National Review.
Yeah. Because this dude's been dropping exactly what's going on. And the latest tweet is, we are done for the night with McCarthy. That is directly from the source. So, why listen to all this other gibberish when Obama and the Senate have turned over all the power to these people in Congress? So I'm looking at them to see
where we're headed. Did you notice when the House Republicans came out to speak? Harry Reid spoke first for the Senate. Later on, when the House Democrats came out to speak, Nancy Pelosi spoke first. But when the Republicans came out to speak, and maybe this is just symbolism, but, you know, I play Pink Floyd records backwards, okay? You would think that the Speaker of the House would speak first, right? No.
Who spoke first?
Let me just say, Cassius has a lean and hungry look. It was Cantor.
Right, that's what I thought she was going to say. Right. I saw him, and I thought, OMG on these people. But it's just a horror show because they, you know, so many of those people operate in their own bubble, like the anti-science, all the sort of weird shit that, you know, when I see Rand Paul up there, you know, he's dreaming about the gold standard, which is like gibberish. And these people are in charge. And it's
You know, I was about to mention the gold standard a little bit ago myself, Sandra, because understand that if we can default on fiat currency, then that opens the door to this right-wing wet dream of a return to the gold standard.
And Germany is still waiting for the gold that they have here. They've been waiting for the last 2 years, and they still ain't got it. So, you know, they made a request to get their physical gold from the U.S., and last I heard, they still ain't got it.
Yeah, we can't find it. The dog ate it.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to. That just killed me, that story, because I'm like, oh, shit. Fräulein Merkel wants that bullshit, and she ain't got it yet.
Oh, God. No.
Anyway, it's not funny. It's all really horrible, actually. But, you know, it's a house of cards, the musical chairs, there's maybe two left, and all this stuff is going down, and the Negro is still in the White House. So it's just a mess.
Well, and bless his heart, Dr. Bill does such a good job of just laying stuff out calmly. You know, he never runs screaming around the room or anything. And yet today, and like I said before, if you listen to him, you know, it's all very calm, very reasoned. And then he pulls out the axe handle and hits you in the forehead with it. And he did it again today because he said he laid out ABC through, you know, J, and said, and if all of this is true, then the only thing that Barack Obama has that he can do that will placate these people is to resign.
Well, he already made a joke about it, and I don't know why he was laughing, because I wasn't. Sucker, you gonna hit the nail on the head. That's exactly what they want. Maybe you should just go ahead and do that, as opposed to us the whole country.
Yeah, did you happen to be, and I'm not trying to put you on the spot, listening, what was it, last week, when I read out that long list of tweets of people calling for him to be done?
Oh, yeah, no, that's just, yeah, good. Yeah, it's too much.
You know, that's not just goofy little teenagers, okay? I mean, when I'm getting lectured by the intake nurse at my local clinic, when Ferg is going to school and the teacher is hollering Obama and N-word, this country is way off the damn rails, Sandra.
Yeah, no. It really, it is. And you see at the very top that it's completely off the rails, because they really are thinking about doing this self-inflicted wound because brown people may get some health care. I mean, I realize it's more than that, but it's sick. I mean, the whole thing is really demented.
Well, it's like back around the break, I think it was Ron and Raleigh who pointed out that it was Dr. John. He said, it doesn't matter if it's true or not regarding Jenny Fox and the snap going to medical marijuana. Her constituents hear snap and marijuana and conclude, quote, this is a problem. Thank Jeebus we have Jenny Fox to protect us from the brown people and their pot. I mean, really, that's this woman put into the congressional record that she voted to cut $40 billion from the food stamp budget because she was afraid that people were using their SNAP cards, their EBT cards somehow, to buy medical marijuana.
Well, yeah, but we saw what happened with the EBT cards over the weekend.
God,
and what was killing me was, you know, I'm looking at these people tweeting about, oh, people are stealing and all that stuff. But I'm thinking, once again, we got the borrowers and the lenders again. I didn't see Walmart not using the cards and letting these people buy all this shit. That seems to have gone missing in the story.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was no limits on the card. But yet and still, Walmart kept letting people shop until everything came back online and people fled with full baskets. And yet those people, oh, they're stealing. And I'm like, I just thought Hunger Games, Mad Max, Escape from New York. I mean, all of it just flooded my mind because I'm like, you know, the best thing that came out of that whole EBT thing was all the stories about New York, J.P. Morgan getting $119 million in 7 years from the fees from that thing.
Yeah,
Xerox getting $69 million in California. I mean, so, you know, once again, the private profiteering is just laid bare, yet the people who need the food are to blame. So, you know, we live in a predacious, predatory country that's swirling around the drain.
But see, I think, I mean, just to go back to the article for a minute, Sandra, I think Felix Salomon has it right, or Salmon. You know, if we default, the immediate impact is not going to be felt in the bond market. It's not like there are going to be Chinese tanks rolling through Poughkeepsie and people shooting from rooftops screaming Wolverines. That's not going to happen. The immediate impact is going to be felt by Granny. And we have to really, really take it into our beings that Granny starving is not just a cute little phrase Charlie Pierce made up. Granny starving is an actual political philosophy of the Republican Party now.
Well, I mean, the U.S. government is a huge military whatever and a social insurance backer. I mean, that's essentially what it does. And, you know, these people who live in a fantasy world of no government and my freedom, you know, they're dreaming at what is going to ensue if these obligations aren't met. I just don't even understand the mentality. I guess it's just see no evil, hear no evil, and government is evil. I mean, I really don't know.
You know, I had a very conservative old dear friend of mine from high school tell me the other night to, you know, quit listening to the really right-wing wackos. They're just crazy. And I understand that this person, who is an old and dear friend of mine, really wants it to be that way in the world. But it isn't. You know, Dr. Bill, for the last couple of days, has been going over these proposed constitutional amendments that Mark Levin wants. And today he pointed out that they only need 8 more states to get that two-thirds majority they need to start proposing amendments to the Congress. Now, just because it's never been done, the mechanism is in the Constitution. So you take this situation that the right wing has deliberately created, and the social and political chaos that will flow out of it, and it's not that far for people to start hollering constitutional convention, because the first thing and the only thing that's going to happen, I realize that the Republicans are taking a beating in the nationwide polls right now, Sandra, but they're not taking a beating in their own districts, okay, one. And two, if everything starts imploding, Barack Obama's approval level during this whole thing is around 42%. How long will it take for that to shrink to zero? I mean, they're gonna blame Obama. And then the Confederacy is going to claim it's all because the government's messed up and they're the only ones who know how to fix it. I mean, I come back to my trope, my meme, whatever we want to call it, of Cold Civil War. It's here. It's been here. And people have made that, you haven't, the Horn family hasn't, but have made this mistake of thinking that, you know, this is not just like 1995, Sandra, is it?
1855, shit.
There you go. I mean,
not only that, but I was trying to explain nullification to an English friend of mine. She was just in tears. You know, I mean, a mixture of tears and laughing, because she was just like, you know, just to hear American politics when you're not here is like the crazy train. And that's what I sounded like.
And you don't mean to. It's just
I don't mean to, but it was just, you know, it was an interesting exercise. And I'm like, yeah, that shit sounds like a whack job. In fact, the whole federal state stuff is just whacked out, you know, straight up here in this country. But anyway.
Well, I don't have a good feeling about this at all.
Well, I don't, you know, I'm just trying to, it's just at the time now, because if you know anything about Congress, I'm not feeling how this all works out, and how many hours we got? 36 hours? Or
Yeah.
48 hours?
And there's this ongoing story that Congress, and by Congress I mean Boehner, may just decide that they're talking about passing a bill and skipping town.
Well, yeah, I heard somebody going on. I was looking at MSM, and somebody mentioned that, and I just thought, oh no, what does that sound like? Yeah.
I mean, but the problem with that, and it's kind of like the thing with the coin, and kind of like the thing with the 14th Amendment. All these progressives out here have a ready-made solution how Barack Obama can just fix it. And this particular story that I was reading said, well, you know, the Constitution allows him to just call them back into session the minute that they gavel out. And then the sergeant-at-arms can be sent out to arrest whatever Congress people don't have a good excuse.
No way. I mean, Scalia actually believes in the devil, and I'm sure Obama is that devil. So, you know, we are dealing with, like, ain't no constitution involved anymore. It's complete wackadoodle. I was looking at that interview with that freak, that Scalia freak, and I'm like, OMG on his actually believing in some evil being and stating it as such. You know, and I'm thinking this person is one of the most powerful people on the planet as it's laid out right now. And they're not going to work with people who they see as a party to the real evil they believe in, right?
Right.
So,
he's the Antichrist.
Oh, God. That's hysterical, all that. Anyway, I don't know. I can't feel awe, so maybe I'm just not really, you know.
Yeah, what are you, awless?
Qualified for that. What did she say? Rational people, they're just cold and they don't really have any feeling. Or she just went on and on about it. I'm like, good night.
Yeah, and it is funny. It is funny, though. I immediately thought of her at the purse counter in Switzerland.
Right! Exactly, calling people all sorts, and then it turns out...
Show you some awe.
Yeah, no, I just was like, oh my God, you know, it's too much. Once again, another good case for, like, alleviating them people of, like, at least 96% of all the money they have.
Well, I'm just so fresh out of patience for anybody who's got $1 billion telling me how I should or should not feel. You know... Shoot me a couple of million, Oprah, and we can sit down and have a conversation. Because, right now I'm just not, we're just not on the same plane now, are we?
Well, she need to call up her girl Tina, who's in Switzerland and gave up this bullshit citizenship with the quickness. As they say, told her in Switzerland, well, Tina, you need to either keep your Swiss citizenship or American. Tina's like, I'll stay here in Geneva, thanks.
Yeah, I'm feeling I'm a real Swiss miss.
And right, so anyway, you know, Oprah. Ugh.
No, hey, but you know, with all of this crap going down, Sandra, you know, we have a tendency to miss some other stuff, and I kind of alluded to it earlier with the failed mascot of Fukushima Industries, Fuck Uppy. God, I still love that. Just any opportunity to say it.
I missed that whole story, except for that typhoon that's bearing down.
Well, that's the thing. With a typhoon bearing down, it turns out that Fukushima Industries, which is not associated with TEPCO, has a mascot that they named, because nobody there is paying attention to what English means. They named their mascot of Fukushima Industries Fuck Uppy. Fukuppy. It was supposed to be Fuku and Happy merged together, and it comes out Fuck Uppy.
Okay.
It's just cute as hell. It's an egg with angel wings and clown shoes and a big smile. But no, there's a typhoon bearing down, and that's not, you know, that's a real risk. And then I got a story here from Reuters. Here's a there's no such thing as climate change headline for you. Thousands of cattle dead after freak winter storm in South Dakota. How about that? Thousands.
I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, freezing rain followed by an avalanche of 4 feet of snow and winds of 70 miles an hour hit thousands of cattle still grazing on summer pastures at a time when the animals had not yet grown their protective winter coats and were ill-prepared for the harsh conditions. Swirling snow lodged in some of the animals' lungs, suffocating them. Hypothermia killed more. Others were caught in gullies or plunged off slickened rock ledges, livestock experts said. I've been in this business 50 years, and I've never seen anything like this, said one fellow who estimated her, or one woman who estimated her family lost nearly half of its herd of 350 when the storm swept through October 3rd through 5th. The vision of seeing all these cattle dead is something you can't wipe out of your eyes.
Now, That's terrible.
Yeah, but you know, no climate change.
No, well, no. I mean, you know, we got to give a round of applause though for the Indian authorities with how they handled that hideous storm they had to deal with over the weekend. I mean, apparently they managed to get 12 million people elsewhere. I don't know. I was quite impressed.
Yeah, it was impressive. And oddly enough, they did. Oddly enough, they didn't just save the lives of people of one caste or.
People with a
certain amount of money. They tried to save everybody they could possibly save. And what was it? How many millions was it?
12, the number I saw.
Yeah.
So I just thought a horrible sort of storm, but I was really quite impressed and pleased to see that some people mattered. You know what I mean?
Well, was it Katrina that crossed over Cuba before it got to, and nobody in Cuba died because they moved everybody to high ground?
Right. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. But Cuba seems to be, you know, super efficient in so many ways, you know. I mean, just in general.
Well, you know, teaching people to read, meeting people's medical needs.
Growing their own food.
Growing food. And yet, you know, we say, well, yeah, they're a communist nation. I mean, it's like that idiot from the Values Voters Summit last night. You know, Lenin said the first step in a socialist state is to give them free health care. Well, and I mean, when it's October 1917 and you're standing in Moscow and everybody's freezing and dying and starving, I don't care what kind of politician you are, isn't your first thought attend to the needs of the people if you're anything but one of these right-wing plutocrats?
Yeah, no, it's just really disturbing that. I don't know. I really don't know what to say about the situation in this country right now. It just is incredible, actually. Incredible.
And I have to ask you a question because this came in from Isaac has his smart-ass hat on. I don't know when he takes it off. This is funny. Ask Sandra, this is from Isaac, ask Sandra, with this upcoming default, will there be more weaves in the streets?
This Negro is telling me about he just spots random weaves bits as falling out, and I'm like, what? And then apparently it's sort of a trend because there was a Tumblr actually called Tumbleweed or Tumbleweave.
Oh, no.
And it had pictures of pieces of, like, long-lost weaves, pieces of weave in the street. So I guess this is some sort of another sign of the apocalypse.
That's exactly where I was going. When, you know, the day the weaves failed.
Exactly. So, and we can add India because a lot of that weave hair is from India.
Yes, it gets shorn in the temple, right?
Right, whatever. I mean, all of it is just way up north for me, since I don't have no weave.
Yeah, that's just past me anyway. I mean,
yeah, it would be with your big old white ass.
Yeah, see.
Why would you know, Bob?
Right.
Oh, listen.
I mean,
I try to be
culturally current. But
I didn't mean to offend.
No, that's okay.
I know there's little issues about.
No.
I don't use the word crack, and that's in scare quotes.
No. That's okay. I acknowledge my reality, Sandra.
I know I've been guilty of saying bad things about the Caucasian folks, so.
No, I'm the guy that gets a sunburn under the refrigerator bulb, you know? I mean, you can only deny reality for so long.
Well, anyway.
I mean, it was a brutal awakening when I went out without a hat on in the sun and came, why does my head feel all hot? Well, damn, a little bald spot's got a burn on it. Some bitch. You know.
That works both ways. Is here I was, you know, dark and whatever, and I'm in New Zealand, la, la, la. I thought, let me go. My ass burnt so bad, and I was peeling. That was like the ozone era, right? So, that was horrible. So that was my taste of, I don't know, being pale, because that, I mean, it's nothing worse, appealing, everything. I was like, oh my God.
Horrible. I've been doing that since I was three. Terrifying.
The only time that happened to me, but it was a bit deeply disturbing.
Yeah, when whole pieces of the largest organ in your body just peel right off. Yeah, and the blisters that come before it.
Well, yeah. Especially when you're told that it didn't happen to you because, you know, of the pigmentation. So, yeah, that was like a rude awakening.
Radiation's radiation, and melanin ain't got nothing to do with it.
In Australia, I'm like slapping on the last amount of sunscreen, looking like a freak. They're like, what you doing? I'm like, what do you think I'm doing?
Trying not to, you know, learn not to burn.
Lesson learned. I didn't go so far as the zinc and all that. It wasn't that crazy, but you know.
No, well, but see, I'm that guy. I have to, you know, there's a whole winching and hoisting system that has to be employed, and it kind of grabs, you know, it's like one of those old Houdini tricks where they had him by the ankles and they put him in the tank. Yeah, they just have to dip me into the whole vat of zinc oxide and pull me out and let me drip dry.
Yeah.
Otherwise, well, I fry.
Yeah, no, it's not that much fun. But anyway, you know, I'm sort of in the middle of fixing this roast with some rosemary and Yukon potatoes.
Oh, I love those Yukon golds.
Right, I'm going to have to go and...
don't burn the roast. Don't burn the roast, Sam.
I won't.
121 degrees, pull that sucker out of the oven.
Yeah, no, it's the other white meat. Ooh! Anyway, okay, Bob, have a good evening.
See you, Sandra. Bye. Bye now. Oh. That certainly picked up the pace of Titanic Tuesday. And you know, Sandra gets it. You get it. We all get it. What the hell's wrong with the rest of the country? Why does everybody... I know there's a bunch of you who don't. But some of us still tune in the for-profit media. And at this point, it's just a matter of watching the for-profit media with a certain amount of slack-jawed wonder. They accept what is presently the reality we're dealing with as the only possible reality. You know, you got Chuck Todd out there and David Gregory and the rest of these overpaid goons telling us that granny starving is the only way. All for the sake of the military. But it turns out that you saw this story break earlier today, didn't you? Do you remember all the hoopla over the one soldier in Afghanistan who was decorated with the Congressional Medal of Honor for his heroics and valor in rescuing his fallen comrades under fire and the government? And at this point in time, anytime the government tells us something heroic has been done, especially if it's the Bush administration. I think it's kind of safe to say that no, it didn't. Do you remember the young woman from Palestine, West Virginia? The young woman who from West Virginia who wasn't Lindy England, and how she valiantly fought off the Iraqis until she was out of bullets. Only it turned out that she was so hurt she couldn't shoot back, and what the Iraqis actually did was to save her life and take her to a hospital and keep her from dying. Yeah. McClatchy has the story from the Ganjgal Valley, Afghanistan. The Medal of Honor winner is Marine Sergeant Dakota Meyer. He, of course, wrote a memoir. Came from Columbia, Kentucky. And he said he switched from his machine gun to his rifle and back to his machine gun as he cut down a bunch of Taliban fighters who were charging his vehicle's turret. Well, now there is video that has come out as a result of the McClatchy investigation that shows that it just didn't happen. Dakota Meyer is being contradicted by the video itself, insofar as there is helicopter video that shows that, well, let's see. Army National Guard Sergeant Kevin Durst said, "We totally flew over everything." And some of the video comes from his helmet cam. He said, "There was nothing going on down there." Oops. And there are even contradictions in the original reports. On the one hand, Dakota Meyer said that he had been charged by Taliban fighters after the helicopter left. But in the book he wrote, he said that the Taliban swarmed the vehicle while he was waiting with a wounded comrade for the aircraft, the helicopter, to arrive. I know that old saying that truth is the first casualty of war. But in the case of Afghanistan, when you're in an illegal war, be it Iraq or Afghanistan, truth is the first casualty of that illegality. The government and the Pentagon had to have, you know, a hero. I mean, you can just look for the story, and you'll see the helmet cam video, and you can look out the windshield of the helicopter, which is not flying at a great altitude at all, and you'll see what the National Guardsman reports is true. Nothing there. Nothing. And the video is something like, what, 8 minutes long? Nothing. And I misspoke. No, this is the, this is 2009, so it's post-Bush. I correct myself. Disturbing, any way you slice it. Talking with Sandra, though, about the referencing what Dr. Bill said about the only thing that Barack Obama could do would be to resign. Well, the Republican Party more and more is getting into a place where they would like to make that much simpler for Barack Obama. It really wouldn't be Titanic Tuesday, in which we celebrate the Titanic intellect of the right wing in this country, if we didn't have a Louis Gohmert story, would it? Well, Louis Gohmert has gotten into the act, and remember, he's one of the people that is part of this rebellion.
this open and treasonous rebellion. You know, I've got how many years of archives behind me now? I think it's honest to say that I don't throw treason around lightly. But I don't know how else to define what these Republicans are deliberately trying to do to our form of government, because this is not an argument about money. This is an argument about whether, what did he say, that nation or any nation so conceived? Will not perish from the earth? Yeah. So it was earlier today when Louie Gohmert of Texas's 1st District, which will continue to send him to Congress as long as Louie Gohmert continues to breathe out and then breathe in again, went on Radio Rwanda. He was interviewed by Radio Rwanda host Allison Camerota. To Allison Camerota, Louis complained, "We have sent over compromise after compromise after compromise with ourselves. Our own leadership proposed yet another compromise, and Harry Reid said all of a sudden he thinks that it's a slap at bipartisanship. He wouldn't know bipartisanship if it came up and slapped him and said, we're bipartisan." So now you got Louie Gohmert talking about slapping the Senate Majority Leader. So I don't need to hear any crap from Harry Reid about bipartisanship. He doesn't know bipartisanship, nor does the President. And then as the interview wound down, Louie had to get in his talking point. And one other thing, remember Louis, who has his asparagus so easily aspersions on his asparagus, who worried about all them pores eating the Alaskan king crab legs that he ain't getting none of? Louis says, and one other thing, this debt default, if the president instructs the Treasury Secretary that though the money is there to pay interest, if he instructs him to default, I think we're getting close to a high crime and misdemeanor that would harm this country. Not going to sit here and say that I've got out the magic eight ball with the cracked glass that says answer hazy, ask again later, and the frayed robes and the appliqué sun, moon, and stars on it or anything. But that's part of this set piece that has long been designed in the filthy bowels of the Heritage Foundation and the Cato Institute and the American Enterprise Institute and American Family Association and Family Action and Values Voters and all of that garbage. Sooner or later, we're going to see Boehner's House convene an investigatory panel to consider articles of impeachment. If Barack Obama was to do something unilaterally to prevent default, assuming there is something he can do, that would trigger impeachment. If the country defaults, even though the Republican House defaults the country, and the default has already begun, we understand that, that will also trigger a move toward impeachment. Damned if you do, and damned if you don't. It's what they want. It is their goal. Ultimately, getting rid of that black one in our White House is where they've wanted to go all along. They just couldn't run right out and do it. And while a few years back Nancy Pelosi may have said impeachment is off the table, at this point in time, the table is nothing but impeachment. And I can only hope I can only hope. That Barack Obama understands that. I think we're getting close to a high crime and misdemeanor that would harm this country. And I remind you that Louis Gohmert, no, really, Louis Gohmert has a law degree. And actually sat as a judge in the state of Texas. You think they won't find some way to put him on an impeachment panel? Granted, I think there are some of us who go, oh, that'd be entertaining. We're past entertainment. Way past entertainment. We are in uncharted territory. This is not 1995. This is like nothing we've ever known before. 1995 was a power struggle between two sides that were trying to figure out, were contesting for who would have control of the government. In 2013, it is a contest between one side that still wants government of some form and the other side which is absolutely committed to the destruction of government as we understand it. All paradigms are officially useless. And I don't know about you, but I find it deeply disturbing. Jeremy's with us from Vermont on the Skype line. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Bob. I just wanted to clarify something. Mr. President doesn't have the power to shut things down, right? It's not individually in his hands to say, hey, I'm shutting this down, shutting that down, and shutting that down.
No, absolutely not.
So, I saw one of the more heinous postings I've seen in a while on social media today, and it was directly racist. And it shows a white Marine putting up his hand as they're putting up barricades at the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial. And it says, ironic, isn't it? The first black president shuts down this monument.
Jesus Christ. Because, of course... But see, you almost rendered me speechless there for a minute, Jeremy. You cannot. It doesn't matter whether he doesn't have the power or not. They continue to say that he did, and therefore, for something like 42% of the American people, he does, because he has magic Kenyan powers of Muslim socialism.
They're blaming all the shutdowns on him, saying he did it. He didn't get a law passed to the Senate and then ratified by the court and can be used as a tax. Therefore, it is legal law. But they're saying he's shutting down all... ...things and locking soldiers. I respect soldiers. They went off, they did a thing. But you can't do this. It's not him doing it. It's just part of the government shutdown. The partial shutdown is these... things that are deemed unnecessary are being shut down.
Non-essentials.
Yeah, basically to keep us from crippling and dying. Those were left intact. And then You know, I hear so many speeches from these people like Louie Gohmert, a couple of these people, Ted Cruz, who now are suggesting that we sell our national parks off because they're an asset we don't need. And they don't just want to sell them to fun people. They want to sell them to frackers, oil companies, great upstanding companies which do no damage to anything they touch.
Right. Yeah, that's been... You gotta... I mean, this is what we are witnessing if we but have the mindfulness to realize it, Jeremy, is we are witnessing the full blossomed, poisonous, corpse-smelling flower of right-wing bircher conservatism that has been, you know, 50 years in the making. I mean, the Republicans don't like national parks, okay? The Republicans don't like, they don't like anything that cannot be sold to the lowest bidder.
It's ironic from the NRA's top supporting political side that they would not want to keep these national parks open or something, because in a lot of these national parks, they do offer moose permits, sometimes wolf permits, depending on what is going on. They do offer things to help control the populations, and those are usually gunned up gun owners that go and do that.
Yeah.
And those permits go in and they help the coffer. They go into the coffer. That money helps support some system here or there, whether it be, I don't know. It seems like all a bunch of ironies clashing together with these people, which they cannot see or refuse to see. And instead, focus their attention on Barack Obama saying, he's done this. He's done nothing except for send me a bill that can reopen the government. That's all he said. And that he won't back down and say, we're going to take away this health care that we put in state for people just because you guys are holding us hostage for it. And to his credit, so far he hasn't crumbled. But I don't think there's a lot of people that listen to this program, to Mike Malloy, maybe Rick Smith, that honestly believe in the end he will hold up his end of the bargain, will not crumple some way against us. And that's a scary thought to me. Personally, Obamacare has worked out for me. I didn't think it would. It actually has so far worked out for me, whereas my employer has decided that I'm worthy of having health care. That's a good thing to me. It was a struggle for me to pay it on my own. I've been paying it for a few months, and even I didn't pay the same amount a lot of people do. I'm not exactly rich being a janitor. I'll tell you that right now. And I struggle for every dollar I make.
No doubt.
So for my employer to step up to bat and say, hey, I deem you as a good employee, I'm going to pay for you, and nobody else in the company because they don't work as much as I do, that's a good thing for me.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, no, this wasn't necessarily it's partially out of the goodness of his heart, but it's also not, because he was given a choice of slashing my hours, of putting more responsibilities on, and if he put more on, he'd have to pay it. So he's being forced to do it. So in one way he's choosing, but in some way he's not.
But it's working.
It's going to work for me, yes. And him. Because under his company, he's an employee, so he'll be paid the same insurance that I am, basically.
Right. And ultimately, this is probably going to wind up being a net positive for business, because it will level the playing field.
Right. And I mean, I'm not one of those people that have been known to go to the emergency room because I have a cough. I rarely go unless I feel severe pain.
You're like the vast majority of Americans, Jeremy. When something goes, you know, when you don't feel good, you gut it out, and you only go to the ER if it really is an emergency. But again, just like, you know, just like Virginia Fox and her brown people squandering their foods, their EBT SNAP benefits on dope, you know, the right wing has created this myth of all of these people who just go to the ER for fun. And, you know, I want to be fair. I have actually seen some of this in action. We've had occasion to be at the ER when you would see somebody in there who was pretty obviously trying to get pills. But it was one or two, and they weren't shutting down the system. And that has a hell of a lot more to do with drug policy than it does with economic policy or health care policy.
You know, there's something else I've noticed, which the old welfare queens driving a Cadillac stereotype.
Right.
I have never once personally witnessed that, but I know probably five or six different people who claim to witness it on a weekly basis.
Right.
One guy was 2 days ago, said that a guy paid for lottery tickets, something else in line with EBT card, then walked out, and he had no problem with that.
No, wait. But how in God's name can you, I mean, I know there are pilot programs in some states, Jeremy, where you can buy fast food with an EBT card. I oppose that. I think it's stupid. Not because I want to tell people what they can and cannot eat, but simply because I oppose a further expansion of public monies into providing welfare to private retail corporations. That's my beef.
But how can
you spend your EBT card on lotto?
And that's why this story didn't wash in the end. Because after he got through the list of things he saw him buy, which was minuscule, and it included some food, and he was okay with that. But then he said that he went outside and saw this guy jump into a brand new 2014 Cadillac. Brand new. And I just don't see how that can happen. I know what, as a single male, I can get for food stamps myself is $25. If it's not a week, it's a month. So that might get me a bag of rice. That doesn't include rent, power, water, any of that other stuff. A bag of rice, maybe. Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, so now we're back into Louis Gohmert and his Alaskan King crab legs fantasy.
Right.
You know, Louis Gohmert does not have, I remember that clip very well. I got a call from one of my constituents. Yeah, because Louis takes calls from his constituents. Please. I got a call from one of my constituents who said he's standing in line behind some welfare people who had a cartload of Alaskan king crab legs. And this is a hard-working man. He said, Congressman, I work hard for money, and I'm standing there with hamburger, and here's these welfare people eating king crab legs, and I don't know when I'm ever I like them. I don't know when I'm ever going to eat them. Bullshit, you know?
I mean, we've
never
we've all stood in
happened.
That.
I would call that man a liar to his face.
We've all been in a grocery store and had that occasionally man, woman with six or seven kids tailing behind them, screaming at the kids, using foul language and just poor grammar. But that doesn't make them all Cadillac queens.
No, it makes them victims of a piss poor educational system. It makes them victims
right.
of a system that doesn't give a good goddamn about poverty in this country. You know, you want to cut crime significantly. But see, they don't want to cut crime, and they don't want an educated populace. We're wandering off into fantasy land as if they did. This country can be a million times better than what it is, but not under any theory, not under any rubric that the Republican Party would ever offer.
And you're right. This country does thrive on poverty. Look at Kmart. Look at Walmart. Look at McDonald's. Look at Burger King.
Right. I mean, I can't tell you how many small towns, the one where I grew up, the one that Beckley for one, even a town as big as Charleston, West Virginia, which is the state capital, there used to be specialty stores. There were dress stores for women. There were men's clothing shops where you walked in, and there were businesses that were owned by people who had been there forever, part of the community, and it was, you know, good afternoon, Mr. Kincaid, and you know, and they knew your measure. Oh yeah, okay, right, yeah. Here's the you're gonna love these trousers. That's all gone now, because if Walmart doesn't sell it, you peasant don't need it.
Right. You know, I sometimes I look at their toys on the shelves if I'm passing through a Walmart, and it'll say made in Taiwan or something like that, and the Tonka trucks, when they used to be metal, I often wonder how many of those were painted with lead, and it just didn't say that on the label or anything.
Yeah.
I mean, there's stories of their milk being painted with lead in China.
Sure.
Yeah. And other horror stories.
Oh, there's an abundance, yeah, they're almost countless. You know, on the other hand, I just had something hit my email inbox. There is a you might be interested to know this, Jeremy. There is a poll that was conducted by the Pew people. 51% of the American people recognize the importance of raising the debt ceiling. However, Only 37% of Republicans think it's necessary. And 37% of the Republicans also think that the debt ceiling doesn't need to be raised at all. These teabaggers are in serious burn baby burn mode. They want to see this country fall. And people are going to get really bored with me, I'm afraid, because I keep saying this. This is an open rebellion against the government of the United States. They have said it from Grover Norquist and drown the government in a bathtub to starve the beast and all the other phrases that the Republicans use. They are sick and tired of what little remains of representative government in this country. And they have the bit in their teeth, and they see that this is their moment. This is the opportunity for which they have been waiting 150 years, Jeremy.
Right.
And we are fools, outright fools, if we think that they are going to take a pass on it. This is their moment. The sun is shining in their faces. Now is the winter of our discontent made glorious summer, and all the clouds that lowered upon our housetops in the deep bosom of the ocean buried. Man, I mean, they are in their glory. And you know what? There's a double bonus. If they can make it nasty enough, Jesus will come back.
Yes. That guy. Yeah. Between seeing that post about Martin Luther King's monument being shut down by the first black president and hearing somewhat Jim Duggar said on that clip you played last night, I've been speechless all day long. I'm just totally baffled by it. And I tried to get a note through to Malloy about it last night because he brought it up. I really hope he was going to rip into Jim Duggar, but he never really got on that
big. Yeah, soft target. Malloy's too, no. That's like shooting, for somebody like Mike, that's like shooting fish in a barrel.
I know, but still, I would have loved to hear it, because I know Malloy would have fun with that one, too, even though it would be a soft target. But I'll leave you with something a little bit better, a little comedical, even though it doesn't do any justice to the name, but I don't know if you've got a chance to catch it now that it's out on DVD and HBO and other places, but Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. It's a cheesy movie, but it actually works. I like it.
Ferg has begged me to watch that. I have thus far resisted.
It is cheesy, Bob, but it's a satisfying movie because it's a different spin, and he can swing one fucking axe pretty well. I can tell you that right now. It might be worth the time if you really want to veg out one day for something which is off the wall and makes no sense, but it works in this case.
Yeah, that's for one of those 12 tequila nights.
Exactly.
Hey, Jeremy, you have yourself a good evening, man.
You do.
All right, Bye. Take care. Bye now. And I'm especially glad to hear that Jeremy's going to have health care. Bill, Mr. Stress, with a note, just simply saying, may your uncle rest in peace. Thank you, Bill. Thank you very much. 93 years is a pretty good ride on this little dirt clod, this pale blue dot. But he will be missed just the same. That is the downside to everybody on the planet being unique. Nobody quite like anybody. This is interesting. I just got an email from Kevin. And this is one of those topics that occupies my mind more than it ought to. But I can't help it because I kind of got a dog in the hunt and it's offensive. Last week there was some bullshit email that Agnes brought to my attention from the Sierra Club asking, can you tell the difference? But is it sludge or is it fudge? And, of course, there was a money hustle behind it. So imagine my chagrin when I see this email come in from Kevin. And the subject line on it is, how to survive a shark attack, which sounds like something out of a Monty Python skit. You know, what to do if a man attacks you with a banana. But how to survive a shark attack, Sierra Club. Bob, writes Kevin, just got a blast email from Sierra Club Insider, the subject line of which was how to survive a shark attack. Imagine that, Kevin says. In these times of possible default, fracking, sequester, they're sending me an email telling me, here in Colorado, how to survive a shark attack. How effing helpful. I'm utterly convinced that the Sierra Club is rapidly approaching. I don't know. Is there a mathematical term called absolute useless? Ah, thank you, Lottie, in the chat room. Landshark, Jehovah's Witness. Hey, you that Landshark? Oh no. There it is. Land sharks. But it turns out it's not so much the sharks you have to worry about. Oh, no. Down along the Florida coast, I'm trying to figure out whether this is the east or the west coast of Florida. 10 people have been killed in Florida this year, not by sharks. Another 31 have been harmed, not by sharks. Now, this is the ocean, okay? The vast ocean sea. The same ocean, you know, Columbus sailed the ocean blue in 1492, yada, yada, yada. Health officials, as they are described, and I'm looking here to find out just which health officials they are, because I imagine most of the health officials are, you know, like furloughed. At any rate, if you're in Florida, and the dateline on this is Escambia County, so that's the Gulf side, isn't it? The Florida members of the Horn family can clue me in on that. Don't eat raw oysters. If you have an open wound, don't go into the water, and it's not because the sharks can smell blood. If something happens and you get a wound while you are in the water, get out of the water as quickly as possible and clean the wound. This is because the waters off of Florida are poisoned, polluted, shall we say, with something called Vibrio vulnificus. It's most often contracted by eating raw oysters that have been tainted. But now in warm coastal waters, the bacteria are apparently thriving even more than usual because I guess, well hey, look, the waters are warming. Symptoms of Vibrio vulnificus infection include diarrhea, extreme abdominal pain, and vomiting. If the bacteria get into the bloodstream, symptoms include fever, blistering, lowered blood pressure, and death. The story with the dateline of Escambia County, Florida, from News Channel 7 WPTV.com, notes that last Monday, Alan Little and Dwayne Reynolds decided to come out to the Sound and fish. Both had open wounds on their legs, making them susceptible to the flesh-eating bacteria Vibrio vulnificus. Did I mention flesh-eating bacteria? By the Wednesday following last Monday, after the fishing trip, one of the fellow's legs had swollen up and he'd caught a waterborne bacterium. or several of them being bacteria. By last Friday night, it had gotten into his bloodstream, and he died. Recently, people with open wounds who go into warm, brackish, or salt water are now contracting the bacteria. If they catch the infection in time, it can be treated with antibiotics. But if not, goodbye now. It gets into the, it goes from the bloodstream to the kidneys. Kidney failure sets in, followed by liver failure, organ failure, and goodbye now. Dwayne Reynolds died. Alan Little sought medical attention. And there is a warning for people to stay out of the water, the waters of coastal Florida. Because, come on, everybody with me, say it. Climate change is the biggest hoax ever perpetrated upon humankind. Planet's not warming? Oh, hell no. No. Those are just ice flows going on vacation. They'll be back this winter, bigger and better than ever. On the other hand, this is interesting. A paper was presented to the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences having to do with the Paleocene-Eocene thermal maximum temperature and something associated with it called the carbon pulse. I do not pretend to have a complete, full, and functioning understanding of what a carbon pulse is. But whatever it is, it's a mess. It turns out that previously, scientists of that ancient time upon the planet had thought that temperatures raised very slowly back about 55 million years ago, which in terms of planetary operations is the last time we had CO2 levels that were rising as quickly as what they are now here on, you know, the dirt clod, the pale blue dot. And the scientists had thought, well, you know, it took a long time for the CO2 levels to go up as high and the temperatures to go. No. According to this news, this new information arising from this paper that's been presented to the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. By the way, those of you who hate snakes, and even those of you who don't, the Paleo-Eocene epoch or era featured a 40-foot-long thing called a titanoboa. If that was what was wandering around the Garden of Eden, I don't blame Eve for listening to him. If a 40-foot snake, starts talking, what are you going to do? Well, I'd run, but you know, don't run. Listen, that tree over there has delicious fruit. No. Anyway, here's the upshot of the report. Following a doubling in carbon dioxide levels, the surface of the ocean turned acidic over a period of weeks or months, and global temperatures rose by 5 degrees centigrade, roughly about 9 degrees Fahrenheit. Sit down for this, please. Over the course of about 13 years. Scientists had previously thought the process happened over 10,000 years. 13 years. Rutgers geologist James Wright said, "We've shown unequivocally what happens when CO2 increases dramatically, as it is now and as it did 55 million years ago. The oceans become acidic and the world warms up dramatically." The climate, it is noted that the Paleocene-Eocene thermal maximum climate would have been, and this is a bit of understatement, really, inhospitable to human life. There's a wonderful article about that. Average temperature on the planet at that time was somewhere around 90 degrees Fahrenheit. That's the average. And yes, it featured a snake that was 40 feet long and 1 ton in weight. We're talking about equatorial tropical temperatures way the hell up in the latitudes where you don't expect them. You know, kind of like what we're witnessing today. I kind of wish I hadn't brought this story along, because now I'm going to have bad dreams. Arctic temperatures during the Paleocene, Eocene thermal pulse, or thermal maximum. Arctic temperatures then were around 74 degrees Fahrenheit. That's 18 degrees Fahrenheit warmer than current climate models had predicted. Scared yet? See, that's one of the things, that's one of the particularly irritating things about this little right-wing rebellion that we are presently, and there's nothing little about it, I shouldn't minimize it, but that's one of the things that's particularly irritating about this right-wing rebellion we are enduring right now. President Not Sure isn't fiddling while Rome burns nearly so much as all of these tea crackers are. Dirty little bastards. They claim to revere life, and yet they support things that are ultimately going to cost the ability of this planet to support human life. Oh no, I mean, sure, maybe maybe we'll wind up with 40-foot-long, 1-ton titanoboas again. They seem to have thrived in those kinds of temperatures. God damn, 40 feet long and 1 ton in weight, that's a basilisk. Wallace Brecker, who made popular the term global warming, is referred to as the Dean of Climate Scientists. It was 20 years ago when he said, "The climate system of planet Earth is an angry beast, and we are poking it with sticks. We're in for big trouble. There's been a true disruption of the basic climate of the planet. My point was that by adding large amounts of CO2 to the atmosphere, we're poking our climate system without being sure how it would respond. Well, now we have reason to believe, reason to think, screw that word believe, now we have reason to think that the way it's going to respond is quickly and nastily." Now, we've had conversations on this program about what happens in 100 years to Florida. Remember Jeff Goodell's brilliant article in Rolling Stone, "Goodbye Miami"? What happens when you have mass out-migrations from one place to another? I mean, I remember how worried Barbara Bush was that the dark-skinned people who had been temporarily dislocated to Houston, I remember how worried she was that they might like it and not want to go back to the flooded lower Ninth Ward. What happens when that's all of South Florida? Now, mercifully, by then, that hateful old beast will have gone on to her just reward. I have no doubt whatsoever that it will involve fire, if that actually existed, but no. But that's 100 years. That's Florida in 100 years. That's, you know, if you live in, you know, that's your great grandkids if you live in Florida. What happens when you cross the tipping point and the temperature of this planet goes up 9 degrees in 13 years, the seas become acid? Goodbye, fish. Goodbye, whales. Goodbye, dolphins. Goodbye, porpoises. Goodbye, you know, everybody talks about the lobster harvest, you know, with the warming water. You know, the lobsters were just procreating like crazy. But it turns out that if you follow the temperature rise up the northeastern coast, that, yeah, they go through a period of wild procreation when the waters warm up, but when they get much warmer, they all die. And that's already happening. There's an old saying out there, the condemned ate heartily. It is sobering, to say the least. And then, because everybody loves a kicker. Oh, by the way, we're still stuck on $115. Just thought I'd toss that out there. We need 11 folks at $10 apiece just to, so we can finish the evening on an even keel and not be in a hole tomorrow evening. Any evening that's got a hole in it is more difficult to, it just is. PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com. So too, the traditional mail address. You are how this program continues. And even though we're not, well, we're working with the Skype line. It's open, by the way, Bob Kincaid Horn. We're looking forward to the traditional phone. I actually saw a call come in here a few minutes ago, so maybe this thing's beginning to work. Would surely be nice. But that's, you know, that's what keeps it all going. And I would like to think that maybe, just maybe, $150 an evening is not impossible. Pardon me for just a moment here. I'm working off of the Skype computer now. Because I really want to run this piece of audio. Every now and then, the for-profit media screw up and get something right, and they're getting a little nasty now. The for-profit media are with these elected teabaggers. Jake Tapper has gotten all pissed off with Representative Yoho of Florida. Are you paying attention at all? He asked him. But the prize, at least for today, and you know why they're getting pissed off? because all of a sudden, they got skin in the game. It was an academic exercise as long as it was a matter of, you know, poor people and their nasty little EBT cards that they buy their dope with, and you know, it was somebody's Social Security check. But by God, if Jake Tapper's 401k is impacted, Jake Tapper is going to get serious in a damn hurry. And so it was that Thomas Roberts on over on MSNBC, got after the bleach blonde version of Sarah Palin from the House of Representatives. I'm talking about none other than Tennessee representing Marsha Blackburn. It was after we all found out that after getting our hopes up and thinking that suddenly John Boehner was going to see reason, and instead he trotted out Cassius, who has a lean and hungry look. I mean, Eric Cantor, leave Britney alone! And we found out that they were going to screw the pooch again. Thomas Roberts got a mite pissed off. Well, not really pissed off, but frustrated, to say the least. And he had teabag and bleach blonde Marsha Blackburn there on the split screen with him.
While we've had the government shut down, while we wait for Thursday to come, which is the default date of the 17th, joining me now is Republican Congresswoman from Tennessee, Marsha Blackburn. Congressman, great to have you with me. And you know, here we are on the heels of John Boehner coming out and giving a brief description of the bill that's being crafted together and cobbled together to get enough support. But it includes revision work or anything tied to the ACA that the president has been very firm on, saying that that's a non-negotiable starting point, especially mainly the delay of the medical device tax. Do you agree that no matter what, something needs to come from the House that still has attachments for the ACA?
Well, I think that one of the things that we're looking at is the fact that the House is the one who continues to pass bills and send to the Senate and continue to invite the President and the Senate to the negotiating table so we can address this. We have been doing that for...
I love that little mustard vinaigrette you can get on your word salad.
...for months and weeks and days and even years when you look at the fact that we're the ones that continue to pass a budget.
Even years, epochs, eons, eras. What the
budget, but nevertheless, we do find ourselves at another deadline, this dealing with the debt, and again, in order to get the Senate working toward something, we are going to take the steps to bring together components of a bill that we will send over to the Senate and be hopeful that they are going to take it up, take some action, and maybe...
Oh, her vorpal blade is going snicker-snack.
Maybe they'll work late for once.
Congressman, let me ask you, though, when it comes to Obamacare, do you hate Obamacare more than you love your country?
I got to tell you something. I think that comments like that you are making are just incredibly inappropriate. What we have to realize is
you don't think it's incredibly inappropriate to shut down our government and to take all the hostages of Americans that you've taken? No, it's not inappropriate because you've taken the government hostage through a shutdown. And all the American people, you're now walking them to a cliff, the economy, and you're going to push them over one by one based on the fact that you don't like the ACA. That's...
Holy shit. Thomas Roberts' 401k must already be tanking. That's inappropriate. I'm Marsha Blackburn. You don't get to talk to me like that. Goodness me, somebody get me my smelling salts. Where's my fainting sofa?
That's all it is. Listen, you don't like
yourself.
The Affordable Care Act.
Listen to yourself. We didn't want a government shutdown. Just listen to the way you're sounding. My goodness.
My goodness. I thought you said I was going to be on Fox. What? He's on the same network with that Al Sharpton?
I thought Joe Scarborough had told them they'd wind up just like Lori Klesoutis did if they didn't behave themselves. Goodness me, goodness.
What's more important is that how we sound. The substance of what we do is meaningless in Marsha Blackburn's little low-functioning, below-average IQ world.
I can't believe what you're saying to me. Goodness.
A lot more are going to be, there's going to be a lot more folks saying stuff like that to her, and to other Repiglicans pretty soon when, it's not going to be, like we talked about, it's not going to be the bond market. The hurt is going to be brought to individuals. I think Thomas Roberts actually knows that, bless his little heart.
We didn't want a government shutdown. We don't want a government default.
Really?
We in the House
because
are
on
continuing
August the 6th,
to work.
At the Economic Club
We're
of Nashville.
Is Thomas Roberts going to hit her with some of her own words on August the 6th at the Economic Club of Nashville? And who actually knew they had such a thing there? I'm guessing it's a little right wing cabal where everybody gets around and chews each other's toenails.
We didn't want to shut down. We just wanted that Negro to take his communist, socialist, Kenyan, Muslim health care plan and throw it away. We didn't want no shutdown. We was just saving America from Kenyan Muslim socialism. Goodness.
On August the 6th at the Economic Club of Nashville, you said everything we can do, whether it's defunding, delaying, repealing, replacing, all of our energy needs to be in every one of these efforts. I applaud Ted Cruz for getting out there and bringing this to the forefront. Did you not say that?
Those are comments that I did make to the Economic Club, and let me tell you why.
So you have been planning a shutdown since August.
No, not at all. Not at all. What you are doing is so inappropriate.
It is so inappropriate. Lupe! Lupe! Get me a Darvon and a margarita. Quickity! Damn! How dare you cross-examine me like some common person? I'm a teabagger. I don't have to answer questions. Where's my Gadsden flag? Somebody get an oath keeper to get this feller out of my hair. Goodness.
Want to shut down? What we want to do is solve problems, and that.
Then shoot yourself. You're the problem.
Just kidding, of course. I don't advocate violence. Now see, that's the problem. We're not. Just gauging by the length of this clip, we're not going to have a chance to get Marsha Blackburn to explain what the problems are. But do we have to? We've been down this road. Marsha Blackburn's problem is that there are poor people uselessly eating food. Marsha Blackburn's problem is that there's a dark man in our White House. I mean, they built the thing and everything, but that don't mean they get to live in it. Goodness!
We try to solve problems. And one of our problems is if people get that Obamacare, they're going to like it. And if they like it, we're effed. I don't like to say the whole word because, then I have to spend extra time getting forgive there at the Holiness Tabernacle and Herpetological Seminary there in north central Tennessee where I goes to church. You know, we got one of them 40-foot long one-ton snakes, and you don't want to be around when we get to handling it.
How can you say that you
do.
Didn't want to shut
Obamacare
down if you said that everything we can do, it's defunding, delaying, repealing, placing all of our energy needs to be in these efforts, and I applaud Ted Cruz.
$2.6 trillion to it.
Trillion, damn it. I said trillion. See, I can say trillion. Goodness. I got my talking points right here. They always work over to the Fox TV. What's wrong? The whole world's upside down. Goodness.
$1.6 trillion program. It is too expensive to afford. We know from history. You can look at what happened in Tennessee.
Oh, shit. We've got another one of those amateur historians. Okay, Lottie, I confess, it did. Evening, Jug of Punch. Jug of Punch just popping into the chat room there. Thanks, Jack. Jack just took us down to 105. And thanks, Jug. Jug took us down to 75, so we're halfway done with fundraising for the evening. Thanks, guys. Thank you very, very much. I don't know how much more of this I can stand, but, well, at least it's somewhat entertaining.
With TennCare, and you can look at how this affected our state. And by the way, it was a Democrat governor who had to come in and reshape that program. What we're saying is, let's learn from the mistakes of the past. Let's look at things that are lessons learned.
But haven't
learned.
You heard from Tennessee Senator Bob Corker calling this silly and self-defeating? All the effort that's being placed into the efforts to try to do something with Obamacare based on closing off the government and then trying to push us against the default.
I got to tell you, it is not House Republicans that wanted a government shutdown. You know as well as I do that the president and Leader Reid are the ones that were pushing for a shutdown. Everybody is aware of that.
By everybody, she means everybody who has a Gadsden flag, everybody who can't spell Antichrist and spells it Antchrist instead, everybody who puts Constitution on the back of their car along with their little tri-cornered hat decal. Yeah, everybody! You know, everybody with an IQ lower than the freezing temperature on the Fahrenheit scale.
At this point in time, what we are seeking to do is to solve the problem.
Congresswoman, let me ask you to stand by real quickly.
$2 billion.
Congresswoman, let me ask you to stand by. Nancy Pelosi is speaking. Stand by, please.
What?
Oh, the nerve of him. He just cut away from me when I was saying trillion to go listening to go and listen to that communist from California. Oh, it's they don't do this to me over on Fox.
You saw here earlier, was that here where they were? The speaker was here?
Yes.
Was the speaker who did not have the votes for his proposal. There's any hope here is that they don't have the votes. So why are they doing this to the American people, sabotaging a good faith bipartisan effort coming out of the Senate, wasting the public's time?
Good question, Nance.
Goodness.
Today's word from Unity is
goodness.
This is what they're sending out. Marsha Blackburn is what they're sending out to defend their rebellion. To defend their full-scale assault on our form of government. Marsha Blackburn. So we'll leave it at that. What a Titanic Tuesday. Wowzer. Thanks, everybody, for all the time you spend, your thoughts, your contributions, your emails, your phone calls when they work, your Skype calls. Thanks. And again, just a gentle reminder, I'm not sure what the schedule is going to be like, simply because I don't know what the funeral schedule is for my uncle. And that's about an 8-hour drive, so I'm not sure where that goes, how that works out. We know I won't be here on Friday, but I may not be here before that. But thanks for what you do to keep all of this going. Hopefully, before airtime tomorrow, we'll get today's fundraising taken care of, out of the way, $75 remaining. And we'll start fresh tomorrow. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox, hard-working rock and roll man in Australia. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHEACT.org, ACHEACT.org. If this rebellion can ever be put down, maybe we can start getting back to the serious business of trying to prevent innocent Appalachian American people from being poisoned to death by mountaintop removal. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next on the Horn. There's a lot of bad blood out there.